The default language is technology, not risk, which means it can be difficult for board to engage if they don't understand what you're talking about.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Fabian Patiliani, CEO from RedShield, and today we're speaking about how companies and boards can make cybersecurity part of what everyone talks about. So Fabian, thanks for joining. It's wonderful to have you on the show today.
Hi, Carissa. Very grateful for having me here. Thank you.
So Fabian, I really want to begin with your point of view because you don't historically come from a cybersecurity background. So it's really imperative for me to get people on the show with your sort of pedigree to be able to, you know, challenge the status quo and provide a different lens on the space on, you know, where we are sort of going wrong, where we can improve. So I want to sort of start with, what do you believe board members are missing from a cyber perspective?
Yeah, great question to start with, Carissa. You know, one of the benefits I have, which you touched on, is I'm a relative newcomer to security. So I have an outsider's perspective, particularly from a C-suite or a board level view. In fact, I still sit on a couple of boards and, of course, as CIO, I report to one. So in my view, what board members are missing from a cybersecurity perspective is an ability to understand cyber for what it is for the vast majority of companies. And that is, it's just another business risk.
Yeah, okay. So I just want to press on that a little bit more. So why is it that boards don't see cyber as a business risk? And I guess, would you say that people overcomplicate cyber to their boards?
There's a few reasons for this. I mean, one of the, and this may sound strange, is that it's a relatively new risk for boards. You know, I know security teams have been dealing with cyber for a long time, but from a board view, you just need to look at the Australian federal government's response to cyber in the last 3 years. You'll know that Cybersecurity Act in 2020 was passed and sets out obligations for companies to make sure they've got appropriate security measures in place to protect their system and data from cyber threats. You've seen the Australian Cybersecurity Agency established, which is responsible for the Australian government's cybersecurity efforts and providing help and support to both private and public companies. And then wrapping all this is the National Cybersecurity Strategy, which sets out how Australia is going to deal with cyber in the next 10 years. And that's all happened in the last 3 years. So definitely there's a change in landscape for the board. I think the interesting implication, and I'll talk a little bit about, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about health and safety. The implication here is that this legislation and what it has, what it means for personal liability is that individuals who are responsible for the security of the organization may be held personally liable for breaches that occur due to negligence. So as I said, we'll most likely talk about health and safety because there's a strong parallel there. So firstly, it's a relatively new risk for boards. And secondly, and I see this and every day when I'm talking to CISOs and security teams, I see it in North America, I see it here in Australia and in New Zealand, the default language is technology, not risk, which means it can be difficult for board to engage if they don't understand what you're talking about. And here's a personal anecdote. I was sitting on a board as a board member, relative new to security. The CISO and the CIO came in, probably 20, 25 pages, beautiful PowerPoint presentation. They took 27 of the 30 minutes allocated to the board slot and threw every acronym they could at the board. You know, you had NIST, you had PCI, you had MDM, SANS, you name it, DGT, everything was in there. And at the end, you know, no board member was going to ask because they really didn't understand what was going on. Now, we got to board-only time and the board turned around and said to me, well, we're safe, aren't we, Fabian? So I said, no, we're not. We most probably already had a breach. And it's just a question, if it's not, then it's just a question of when we're going to have one. And from that process, from that moment onwards, I started sort of the process of how do we transform the culture of the organization to really understand cyber and understand what the risks are and therefore what's the right level of investment for the company to reduce that risk.
Yeah, okay. Definitely that question on are we safe? And I guess it's a bit more of a complicated and complex answer when people ask that. And I kind of understand it because there is this massive disconnect between boards who are ultimately responsible for the well-being of their customers and their organization. So it's very easy to sort of ask that question, which does require a sort of a longer answer. But when you said before and the acronym, so why do people sort of get to that stage? Is it because it's habitual for them so they don't know any different? Is it because they're trying to sound smarter than perhaps, you know, they are smart people, but Is it more that, or is it more so they're not even aware of what they're doing and they just assume that people sitting in that room understand what all these acronyms and terms mean?
Yeah, I definitely think that's part of it, Carissa. A lot of the time, people expect boards to know everything there is about all parts of the business, particularly their part of the business. But the board meetings are short, they're concentrated, you've got a lot of decisions and a lot of risks to deal with. And as I said, cyber is just one other risk that they've got to get their heads around and decide, have they got the right level of support and investment to make sure that cyber doesn't get in the way of what they're trying to achieve with that business. So definitely, I think that's part of it. And look, my advice is speak to the board so that they can understand you. And by doing that, don't use technology as a starting point. Speak their risk language. And, you know, this is fast changing. A couple of high-profile breaches we saw in Australia last year means the conversation is changing very, very quickly. And I'm noticing a lot more that directors are talking about resilience. Yeah, and I know it's a bit of a buzzword, but resilience, when it's followed up with detect, respond, recover, and starting to notice that language means that the organisation is on a good track. So I'm definitely seeing a change here. I definitely agree. Don't assume the board understands your world as well as you do. Keep it simple. Highlight the risk. Highlight what you're going to do about it to reduce that risk.
Okay, so there's a couple of things in there. So I want to press on a little bit more. You said use a risk language. What's an example of a risk language? Like, how do people communicate that?
So if you think of your classic risks, business, operational, legal, legal or reputation, break it down into those buckets for the board. So the first one is this going to stop us from doing our prime directive as a business, whether it's making products, whether it's offering services? What is the risk? What does it mean to the operations of the business? Two, is it going to cost us money if we're, you know, what is the impact? Is it going to require us to pay ransomware? Is it going to require us to be down and therefore the systems are not going to support us from doing what we do every day? What is the impact? Legal, are we legally responsible? You know, thinking about financial services or healthcare where there's extra legislation in place and requirements or PCI, are we going to have problems around those areas of risk? And what does that mean for us as an organization?
And then sort of just pressing a little bit more, you said keep it simple. Now, for some reason in our space, people tend to not do this. So from your point of view, coming as an outsider into our space, what would be your advice for people to just keep it simple? You mentioned before around, 27 minutes of all these acronyms, like that's obviously very convoluted and very complex. How would you recommend people, if they are doing this, what can they make the changes to be in line with more of your theory of keeping it simple?
Yeah, sure. I think the first thing is, as I said, start with risk language. We talked about those risks just a second ago, but give context. You know, so rather than come and say, here's all the fantastic technology that we're deploying and this is going to reduce risk, is what are the critical systems and processes and data that our business relies on? Give them that context. You know, this one question allows them to zoom in on the impact if something should go wrong, and that's what you want. There's a real danger that you want to tell them about everything that you do and show them all the risk. And I would say, as tempting as that is, don't go down that path. It's much better to focus them on the main risks, not all the risks. And then bring it to life for them. So what are the likely threat actors? What are the methods of attack they're going to use? Again, think likelihood and impact. You know, if it's DOS, does that mean we're going to have an availability problem, which means your customers can't get on the website to order products or have services? What is it that is going to stop the business from being successful? Keep it simple, but link it to the actual strategy of the business to reduce that risk. So what is the cyber mitigation strategy? What are the objectives? That's the time to get them to understand that. It's way too dynamic and ever-changing. You know, one of the facts that I use, and it's very application security-centric, is that there are 2 billion apps in the world and 27 million software developers. And with hundreds of new software vulnerabilities being discovered each week, this can feel overwhelming. So yes, by all means, give that context, but most of the breaches are coming from vulnerabilities that are known, and that if you focus and prioritize those vulnerabilities, you're going to seriously change your risk profile. So if you can walk the board through that, give them the context, show them where you want to invest and what that will do to reduce the risk, I think that's going to make a huge impact and start helping the board embrace the challenges, which are significant in security, that you face every day.
I like the part where you mentioned the context. So, for example, in my field of work, I'm in media. If we're shooting something, for example, we'll say, hey, we need to record it this way. And people are like, okay, well, why? Then I give the context and it makes a little bit more sense rather than just saying, hey, we need to do it this way and complicate things. I always try to lead with that so people understand why I'm doing it a certain way, why it makes sense, because I am walking them through the process, the context, and providing sort of examples around it. I think for some reason in our space, people just dive head first and then they don't give that context. And then they're probably almost annoyed that people don't get their train of thought. Have you seen that a lot?
I agree. And it's just about putting yourself in the shoes of your audience, right? It's as simple as that. If you understand what a board does, that's a good start. If you understand the way a board meeting works, again, all good context. You would never go in, the example I gave before, you would never go in with, you know, speak at them for 27 minutes and ask any questions at 3 minutes if you want engagement. It just doesn't work. And there's almost a belief that if you keep it too simple, then you're not really putting forward how difficult the challenge is. And it's really the opposite. If you keep it simple, you'll get understanding. If you get understanding, you've got a good chance of getting buy-in. And so I'd really, you know, it sounds very, very simple, but you'd be surprised of how many conversations I'm having with directors and not only boards, but C-suite, CEOs, CFOs, people that don't have cyber on their mind morning and night. And that context piece, keeping it simple, is really the key to getting engagement.
Absolutely. And why, you know, it's not their role day to day. Yes, they're responsible for it, but hey, if they're a CFO, they've got other things on. Okay, well, I've got to look at how many people are on the payroll each month and who we owe money to, who owes us money. They're thinking about other things then as well. So you can't really expect people to be super absorbed, and that's the benefit of having a CISO at the board to be able to educate the board on how it works by providing the context and keeping it simple, to what you sort of mentioned before. So then let's go back to keeping it simple. You said before, maybe people don't know how a board works. You've got board experience. How does it work?
Well, the board is there to provide oversight, to make sure that the company's got all the right resources. It's got a clear strategy. It's got access to capital so that it can invest in building factories or buying IT systems. It's got to make sure that all the right resources are in place for the company to be successful. Now, part of that is asking yourself the question, which is, what can stop the company from being successful? And then you get into risk. And that's predominantly a big chunk of what the board does. It looks at all the risks, makes sure that it prioritizes those risks, and it makes sure that it can minimize the impact of any of them. And literally, if you've looked at a risk register that a board looks at, it's huge. You know, it has every type of risk that can stop the company from being successful. But like cyber risk, it's a case of prioritizing and understanding what's the context, what's the likelihood, where should I invest to reduce the risk of that impacting my business? And you're only going to put money and resources where the most important serious risks lie. And that if you understand that, and you understand that you're competing for resources with health and safety, with exchange rates, with any kind of operational risk, if you can understand that and go in and provide the board a simple way to say, hey, my risk is here, but if I invest this amount of money, it's going to reduce down to this level, then you're going to be successful. And boards are engaged with cyber. We talked about the changes in the Australian landscape over the last 3 years. They want to know, and it is changing fast. So it's never been a better moment for security teams to present what they do and how they do it and what they want to do to keep the organization doing what it does best, which is not necessarily security. And that's the thing. We've got to make sure that security doesn't stop the business from doing its primary directive, whether it be a service, whether making products. That's the balance we're trying to achieve.
Okay, so I just want to sort of touch on this a little bit more, and then so you can elaborate more around your thinking, and that's in relation to boards don't look at cyber as a business risk in relation to how they view other business risks, for example. So would you say, First of all, I want to understand a little bit more about that, because then I'm curious on if when the cyber risks come up on the risk register, one, are they even on the risk register? And two, are they just being deprioritized simply because someone can't explain the context, no one understands it, and therefore what do people usually do when they don't understand something? They ignore it.
It's not so much that boards don't look at cyber as a business risk, but if you want effective engagement, don't engage them on technology as a starting point. I think that's the key point. Speak their risk language. The industry itself is not really helping. So if you have a look at all the overreach of marketing messages, and in fact, I was at RSA a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco, and I was just walking the floor and the messages coming at you, don't worry, take this magic tool, this magic technology, and you'll be safe. That doesn't help. I mean, it's almost like a cyber wash equivalent of greenwashing. And therefore, if you're translating that to boards and not having honest conversations around the likelihood of breaches and that, you know, most companies are going to be breached at some stage in the future, and focusing their ability to understand that you're trying to build resilience so then when things happen, you can move quickly to contain and recover and get the business back on an even keel, that's the balancing act that I would say you'd be striving for.
You raised a great example that I wanted to ask you about in today's interview. And the example was, you mentioned the construction worker falling through the floor and then how that example relates to how businesses should view cyber risks. I'm really keen to understand more about that construction worker story.
Yeah, let me stitch that together for you. So the parallel is back to health and safety, which I touched on before, which I think is a really appropriate and helpful comparison, particularly in Australia. So I was running a large company at the time. We just achieved, I think it was 5 ISO standards, quality, environment, food safety. I think it was 18,001 for health and safety. So we were very happy with ourselves. We kind of identified that health and safety needed to be fixed. And I say that with inverted commas because that's the parallel with cyber. We were going to fix it, and we did all the standard operating procedures, and we were feeling pretty happy that, you know, the ISO accreditation reflected that we'd fixed health and safety. And then about a month or two later, we had a contractor fall through a false ceiling at one of our sites. It was a really serious accident. And fortunately, they recovered. You know, we went back and did a root cause analysis and came out that, yes, there were SOPs, but they weren't followed the right way. And I think what that brought home to me at the time was there's something very different about having standardized processes and writing them down and then having a culture which embraces them. And that's the parallel that I believe we have with cybersecurity. And it took us about 5 years, Chris, for that culture, that health and safety culture, to really bed in. Led from the top, all the leaders in the business, making sure that health and safety was part of their everyday thinking when they're in high risk areas. And the connection I make is that, and particularly with the companies that we're working with, is the difference between a company that looks at a program versus a project. So the project is the equivalent of, we'll fix cyber and we'll come in and we'll do all these things and put all these controls and it'll be fixed. Where the companies that we work best with are the ones that look at it from a continual program basis, where they're finding vulnerabilities, they're fixing vulnerabilities, they're managing, they're monitoring vulnerabilities. And to be able to do that and not disrupt the business, you need mature organizational processes and a culture that makes security part of what you do, not this thing on the side that sometimes gets in the way, so that when things go wrong, you know, security issues are quickly resolved without it compromising security. So that's the analogy. And it's interesting to see in Australia how health and safety and legislation played a real role in improving health and safety outcomes and what that means now for cyber. And I think, as I said before, the time's really good now for security teams to be able to engage senior executives, the C-suite, engage boards, and help them really understand the challenges that we face, because they are significant. But like any risk, you can prioritize, you can focus, and you can really reduce risk to a level that makes sense for the business to invest in.
So going back to your example on the health and safety with the worker, do you think it's a little bit easier for people to relate to because you can physically see someone being injured versus, fortunately or unfortunately, in cyber, it's something's like tangible. You can't necessarily see it. So, for example, if you're spending arbitrary number, $1 million a year in cybersecurity, and then nothing happens, that's a great outcome. And so Do you think that it may be if people feel a bit more removed from understanding the impacts because it's very different when someone falls through a floor and they get injured versus, oh, like, you know, someone's externally like attacking our organization or someone stole money out of your account. Like maybe that's a little bit more like people can relate to it. But is it more so that people struggle because they can't see it or they can't touch it? And so therefore it just, there's this dissonance between the two.
Yeah, look, I definitely think it's a combination, but I do agree with you. Health and safety is a lot easier because you can walk along a floor and go, oh, that's slippery, I can fall over and do myself some damage. It's easy to get your head around. There's not much technical language that can get in the way with you understanding that. So then it comes back to how do we reduce some of the complexity that we have in IT, in security, make it digestible, make it as easy as explaining what I just explained with the slippery floor. That's the challenge. And it can be done because you see, I'm fortunate enough to work with lots of really good companies that are able to translate that language and also show what you can do to reduce risk. And I would really encourage everybody to be super focused on that return on investment or return on mitigation, even better, to show when I invest money, this is what happens to risk. If we have that mindset, I think we're going to get a better outcome as an industry as well. Because if you look at the industry, we're spending more and more money on security, but we're not getting less breaches. It's going the other way. So there's a lot of security that is not being successfully measured to actually say this is working or this is not working. And that's certainly going back to what you said to me before, which is, and what's your observations coming in from outside of security? That for me was really quite telling when I looked at, there didn't seem to be the same level of scrutiny from a return on investment point of view for security measures as there are for many other parts of the business, whether it be marketing investment, finance investment, manufacturing investment. Security seems, because it's difficult to get your head around to your point, it seems to escape that ability to be scrutinized. But that's going to change because we just can't keep spending more and more money to get poor results as an industry. We've got to get better at that. And I certainly encourage every security practitioner to make that a priority to make sure they're justifying their investment. If not, you're wasting the company's money and you're not scrutinizing your own team's performance to actually reduce risk.
So just on the scrutiny part, so are you saying that people aren't sort of looking into it as much as opposed to, like you said, marketing or whatever, because they don't understand it? So therefore, they're probably spending a lot more money on cybersecurity?
There's a lack of understanding and fear from outside the security teams or the IT team's perspective, which is, oh, look, there's a risk. We've got to invest money. It's very difficult for me to understand what they're doing. I'll just give them more money so that I've discharged my responsibility for the company to say it's got enough money to do security. So that's the worst case. The best case is we understand risk, we've prioritized risk, we've invested this amount of money and we've got these results, which means we're confident to keep investing because it's working. And if it's not working, we don't want to continue. So I think between those two extremes is where the vast majority of companies lie, and we've got to move people towards that. Here's what I'm doing to reduce risk. I'm measuring it and I'm reporting against it rather than just report big numbers. Here's the return. Here's how risk has been reduced. Here's what we've prevented. Here's how we've taken care of operational risks, financial risks, reputation risks. I think that's where the industry needs to get a lot tighter.
So in terms of like a barometer, what I'm curious to know from you, Fabian, is you're going into a board. Is there anything that's sort of, from your perspective, like words that resonate more or examples or context that resonates more with boards? So my example would be when I'm talking about content marketing to people, there are certain things that I know that resonates more than perhaps other things in the field of work that I do. Is there anything that you've sort of noticed that people start to really listen when you say a certain thing? Because maybe from a security point of view, people think that the thing in their mind that may resonate with their board or their audience just in fact doesn't. And because you've come in from this different lens, there may be something that people can take away on things that are working for you.
We talked about legislation. Going back to the parallel with health and safety, now that with the latest cyber legislation, that directors may be held personally responsible or liable for breaches that occur during negligence means you're going to get higher levels of engagement. So I think that's, again, the good news from an Australian perspective for security teams. Then it's back to make it simple for the board to understand. Don't assume that they've got a good understanding of everything that you have. Break it down for them. What are the critical things that stop us from doing our bread and butter activities, whether it's selling products, as I said, or providing services? What's going to stop us? And how do we make sure that that doesn't happen? And what's the right level of investment? Because sometimes, if you can outsource risk to cyber insurance, fantastic. But we all know that's getting harder and harder and more expensive. But there may be a point where the cost outweighs the risk. And therefore, risk acceptance is okay, but you really want to have that visibility and scrutiny. And you've got to present that case so it's easy for them to get their heads around. But, going back to those key principles, make sure the investment is scrutinized and there's a return one way or the other. Those principles will always mean you're going to get good engagement from the board and your C-suite. And remember, the board signs off the company's objectives and budgets, but really your first gatekeepers are your CEO, your CFO, those teams, the CIO. You've got to get those guys understanding what you're doing and why you're doing it. And if you can do that, you're in good shape, I think, for boards as well.
So I'm curious to know, I've been in the space, 10 years now? And people even 10 years ago were saying, the language and how we speak to our boards. And now 10 years on, you're sort of saying the same thing. Do you think in another 10 years, you and I are going to have the same conversation? And I get that it's not flick of a switch, like we're on now and everyone's going to understand and learn. I get that it's going to take time, but we still seem to be having the same problem even the last 20 so years. Do you envision in the next few years, it will get better in terms of how we are engaging our board, how we're communicating to our board? Because I have seen the needle move, but obviously just not enough. So is it going to be 50 years before everyone sort of gets the hang of it?
I definitely think Australia is an interesting case in point because legislation, I'm looking at all the different markets around the world and you're looking at, carrot versus stick, and health and safety went down stick and had some pretty good outcomes. And Australia is now following that path with cybersecurity. So I feel confident that we're not going to be talking about this in 10 years' time in the same way. I feel that there's going to be a real shift. Now, I don't know if that's going to be in 2 years or 5 years, but we're on a path now where this is part of every day for boards. There's no board in Australia that doesn't have cyber on its risk register. There's absolutely no way that that's the case. It's now really up to the security teams to make sure they understand what that risk looks like and make sure they've got the appropriate level of investment to make sure the business can do what it does best. And for that reason, and for, overlaid with legislation and all the pieces that the federal government's responded to, coupled with the high breaches, the high profile breaches that we saw in some of the biggest names in Australian brands last year, I think it's going to be different. I'm very optimistic, but that comes with the challenge. And I think that the security teams really need to embrace that they can engage the C-suite and boards in a different way and break it down, keep it simple. It doesn't mean you sound like you're too basic when you reduce it to something easy to understand and digest.
Do you think that some people think that they sound basic?
I definitely have come across that before where, we don't want to say that because we sound too simplistic. Absolutely not the case. As I said, the board's got a lot to get through. It's got a lot of business and a lot of key areas that it needs to make decisions on during a board meeting. Keeping it simple gives you the best possible chance that they understand what you're doing and how you're doing it and what you want to do to help the business be successful. You can never oversimplify it. I think that will never, ever come back to bite you. It will only help you get better buy-in. So I really encourage teams to embrace that. I think one of the challenges we have is that in security, we're coming across some really difficult challenges. The odds are stacked against us in terms of cyber criminals. They just need one area, one vulnerability, one weakness to be successful, whereas we need to be right all the time. So it does mean we've got really smart people in the industry. It does mean that we're solving complex problems. But the reality is, the board needs to be able to understand that. And talking to them, the default language of technology is going to make it really hard for them. You're much better to talk their language, which is risk, and keep it simple would be my advice.
And then I just want to sort of zoom out now for a moment. Obviously, most of our discussion has been very focused on boards and C-suites, but what about sort of like broader businesses or the broader community for people to make cyber part of what everyone thinks about? Is there any sort of recommendations you'd like to leave our audience with today, Fabian?
I would say the same principles apply. I was thinking about it on the weekend because, you know, a lot of friends and family say, oh, what do you think we should do? And, you know, I think the same principles apply. You know, I'll give you an example. You know, I was with some friends having drinks on Sunday and this topic came up and they said, oh, tell us what to do. And I was going, you know what? Make yourself a hard target for cyber criminals. Don't let them steal from you. Let them go elsewhere. And to do that, focus on where your risks are. And I said, who's got the same password for one or more of their apps? And of course, everyone has. And I said, well, don't. If you want to make yourself a harder target, make it hard for them and make the password as long as you can. And then, you know, so on and so forth. You could introduce MFA. And if you want to keep it going, you could put a diary reminder every 6 months to change your most sensitive app passwords, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the same principles apply. I think there's also a leadership piece as well, which is if the security team can get the CIO, the CTO, the CFO engaged in this, they'll have natural champions. And of course, the CEO, they'll have natural champions. And if you've got those members of the C-suite on board, understanding what you're doing, they'll become champions because nobody wants to compromise what the business is doing for its primary directive, whether it's selling products or services. That's the nightmare for the C-suite team. It's a nightmare for the board, but it's also a nightmare for the people running the business. So if you can explain to them, engage them, they want to know because cybersecurity is really important. It's you know, just think of how technology has transformed all parts of our lives and our business, our working environments. It's just going to keep getting more and more scrutiny. So I think, as I said, I'm really optimistic because we've got attention now through legislation. We've got high profile breaches, which has meant that cybersecurity is on everybody's lips.
Well, I think that's excellent because some of these things are not easy to do. I totally understand that. But again, it's getting people like yourself on the show to share your insights and your thoughts, the intent that people take your insights and they can start implementing them straight away in their organization. And I understand that things do take time, but I'd like to hopefully say that it's not going to be another 10 years before we start to really see the needle shift. And I would even say even in the last 5 years, I've seen the uptake and also the line of questioning, even coming from like general everyday people that aren't even in their space to start asking the right questions. So hopefully we are now on the right track and we'll start to accelerate faster towards that. So Fabian, really appreciate your time. I've loved that you've given quite specific examples about how this applies to boards and to C-suites as well. So thanks so much for your time and thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed our chat and yeah, all the best. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MercSec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MercSec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.